Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome to Women Worldwide. Let's start off with an excerpt from the book Sober, which means, son of a bitch, everything's real. While laying in an empty bathtub in a Motel 6 in Vermont, Mike takes a handful of OxyContin and waits for the heart palpitations to kill him. As he starts to fade, he reads a text on his phone. Son, I love you, and I need to know that you're okay. Struggling to understand why anyone would care about him because of his years of drug abuse, he responds, Mom, no one can help me. Can you imagine if this was your son, daughter, or any of your loved ones? The book Sober was co-authored by Anita Devlin. It's the story of how she felt during the harrowing experience of helping her son through his addiction. Anita is here today on the show, and she's going to share her story with you. Anita, welcome to my show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Deirdre.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're certainly very happy that you're here. And you have a story that every parent and family needs to hear. That experience of helping your son navigate his addiction, which eventually, the good news is, led to his recovery. But when did you first realize that there was a serious issue?
High school. The beginning of high school. He was just going into ninth grade. And everything was changing about him. And I really hadn't put everything together when it first started happening. But he was a lacrosse player. He had had a few surgeries, two shoulders and an ankle surgery. And right after that is when his mood started changing. His attitude changed. His friends changed. It was all going on right before my eyes. And that was back, 2005, 2006. Back then, I'd like to say that I was in denial back then, but I really can't say that because no one is really talking about addiction the way it's in the forefront now.
Right.
It wasn't a conversation back then, So I blamed all of his changes. I blamed everything on his friends. I was always looking past him. I was never really looking right at my son because, I was his mother and I thought he was perfect.
Oh, sure. And, sometimes you think teenagers in high school going through different phases of their development, maybe this is just an attitude change. You said something really interesting that back in 2005, 2006, no one was really talking about addiction. And what I find interesting even today, because I was watching a 60 Minutes episode, and on 60 Minutes, this was just recently, they were saying that, it was a bunch of families who had come together, and families who had experienced either their sons or daughters or loved ones move from opiate painkillers to heroin, like it was nothing, and that a lot of families were invited to come on the segment but didn't want to talk about it. So I think it's really wonderful that you are talking about it. And do you feel that more people are, rallying around experiences and sharing?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a necessity. Keeping a secret is exhausting and it can be very dangerous, very dangerous. You can't keep a secret. You have got to reach out for help. You've got to talk about it. You have to, and I speak as a mom, the support systems that are out there for parents and especially the mothers that are just so involved because, they say we're all codependent and maybe we are with our children until we're dealing with addiction. And we have to understand how not to be codependent anymore. But if you keep a secret and you don't reach out for help, you could suffer. There could be horrible repercussions. you won't know what to do. You won't know how to help your child because none of us are handed a handbook, obviously, when we become parents, especially not a chapter on addiction.
Right.
So that's the tough part. I mean, I understand that some parents aren't. There might be sharing. There are so many private sites and social media where parents are on there and talking, but they want their anonymity. The show on 60 Minutes was brilliant. A few of those parents are on. I know them from the blogs and the websites we're on. It's all about helping each other. And that was in Ohio, where one of the biggest problems is happening. I mean, the whole country has horrible problems right now, let's face it. A new statistic came out yesterday that the number of deaths due to drugs in this country now would be comparable to a major airline crashing every day.
Oh my goodness.
It's pretty scary.
That is really scary. You said something about the codependence. I'm curious about the family unit. So from your experience, can you just talk a little bit about how addiction might be an octopus that affects the entire family and the relationships?
I call it an octopus because it is a family disease. The level of stress that takes place within a home when someone is suffering from addiction, basically it makes rational decision-making for a parent impossible on a day-to-day basis. Siblings, I mean, the poor siblings, you read, my daughter writes in the book, siblings are lost when someone else is struggling with addiction in the family. The one that isn't, the children that aren't, are pretty much ignored because all of your energy as a parent is going towards your addicted child. You become addicted to their addiction. You're just in panic mode. You're in total fear. You're petrified. And what happens is your family can just be torn apart. If you're not all on the same page and being educated and getting help, this octopus can reach out beyond the primary family members because as a parent, you can become withdrawn. You don't participate in family holidays. You kind of shut down because you don't want to make excuses for your child that's struggling. It's fear. It's all fear of being judged, which is a really, really bad part of all of this is judgment.
That sounds like a horrible part. The fear, and so as you have this fear and you're nervous about the judgment, it's definitely taking a toll on you emotionally. But what about physically? And, you know, do you ever feel that, you know, the stress? And maybe this hasn't happened to you and your family, but have you heard, you know, is that type of stress causing such anxieties, creating other conditions or high blood pressure, or does it eventually weaken your own good health?
Well, absolutely. Mothers always put everyone before themselves, which is also very dangerous. I ended up having a heart attack because of all the stress. I had a heart attack at age 50.
Oh my.
And you really are honestly so focused on trying to help your child. You know, the biggest problem and why this happens is because, you know, we think we can fix everything as moms. We think we know what's best. Well, I shouldn't say we. I thought I knew what was best for my son. I thought I could fix anything that was wrong with one of my children. And honestly, Deirdre, you know, now when I look back on it all and after going through all of my own recovery work, I was pretty much as sick as my son.
Yeah.
I was thinking that I could take care of all of this. And I had said to him recently, you know, I had a great conversation with him, and I said, you know, maybe I've never said it to you before, but he's 5 years in recovery as of this past Friday. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm really, really sorry that I enabled you all those years.
Oh.
And he he said to me, you know, Mom, you need to understand that I work with moms all the time now with the boys that I'm helping. I understand that mothers think they can fix everything. I get it. I know why you were that way. But you actually didn't enable me. I was going to do drugs with or without your help. Hmm. What you did do in the beginning was you disabled me from getting help because you were so petrified to reach out and ask for help because you were so afraid of judgment. And it's true, Deirdre. It's really a vicious cycle. And I work with a lot of moms now, 5-6 days a week, trying to get them to understand, to get past that, just like I had to.
Well, that was a great conversation with your son. And I'm so glad to hear that you are working with moms and sharing your knowledge. And it sounds like he also is working with, you know, maybe young men or women to help them. One thing that... Is there a difference, so from what you've seen and what you've been through with your son, is there a difference between, let's say, substance abuse and addiction? And when you, yeah, how do you know when you cross over?
It's a really good question. And here is where stigma comes from. People who are not dealing with addiction and can't understand it can't be bothered with being educated on it. And it's really just as simple as Googling and asking what the difference is. You know, there's so many different definitions. I actually reached out to Dr. Garbley at the Care and Treatment Centers, and I said to him, can you please put this as simply as possible for people to hear? And I really love the way he answered it. Now, substance abuse is when someone uses, but the pattern changes haven't happened in their brain yet. So they actually still have control over misusing the substance. Then when you talk about addiction, this is a crossover. Addiction is a disease. Substance abuse is not. Addiction is a disease that involves actual activation in areas of the brain that leads to that loss of control. Chemical changes actually occur. And that's what makes it impossible for someone to have control of their using. So it's really all about crossing that line and the person losing control. That's when it becomes addiction.
That's really important information to know. And personally, what do you think as you step back throughout this entire process, the experience, and now that your son is in recovery and for so long, which is wonderful. What do you think was the hardest part as a mom, you know, experiencing that crossover into addiction?
I think it was all about me. It wasn't even about my son. I mean, I can go back to what I just said to you before. It's the most important part for a mother to understand that, you know, I was sick. I was just very much in control, you know, of my children. I thought that, you know, when you talk about enabling, I thought I could help my son. I would try to make him feel better about himself. Oh my God, why is he so depressed? Why is he using drugs? Let me help you find a great job. Let me buy you a new car. Let me give you this. Giving, giving, giving. Here's some money. Go skiing. Feel good. Get healthy. Well, all that money that I was handing my son and giving him, I was actually enabling him so badly that I was funding his addiction. And that was really frightening. Really, really frightening. And I didn't find that out until later. I just, everything was just spinning so much out of control. And I guess I really just had to learn, Deirdre, you know, I've never had to ask for help for anything in my life. And I think that, again, a lot of mothers are like that. We're the ones that fix everything.
Right.
And the hardest part was, in, you know, getting the courage up to ask for help. And there are three C's we always talk about in addiction, you know, that we have to remember as a parent. We didn't cause it. We can't control it. We certainly can't cure it. But then again, I needed to understand the fourth very dangerous C, which was don't contribute to it. And that's what I was doing because I thought I knew better than the experts. And I was doing all of these things for him I shouldn't have been doing. A mother needs to understand that it's kind of like being on a flight. You're on an airline and you've got your child next to you. What do you do when the oxygen mask drops? You have to put yours on first in order to help your child. And mothers have to take care of themselves and have to understand that. If you're not well, you are not going to be able to take care of your child. And again, the bottom line with addiction, it's not about saving them. You can't save them. It's about being there for them as they save themselves. And without that oxygen mask on and being healthy, you're not going to be able to be there for them. And that's the most important thing that I learned.
Well, Anita, just by what you shared, and thank you for sharing that. I'm sure you're helping other people, many other people, to realize the process and what you have to go through and how you need to sort of fix yourself and be healthy. And those four C's are really powerful. I'm speaking with my special guest, Anita Devlin, co-author of Sober. In the next segment, Anita will share her thoughts on moving through the recovery process and how relationships have changed.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from interest to action, giving you a roadmap that fosters deeper engagement and forges stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformance.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show, where Anita Devlin and I were just discussing her new book, Sober, and how addiction is like an octopus that affects the entire family. Okay, so, Anita, I've been looking around and, of course, you know, noticing what folks are saying about your new book, Sober, that it's not a feel-good, preachy, sentimental story. And it's about real fears, which you had mentioned in the earlier section. So is this what you were trying to capture when you and your son wrote Sober?
Exactly what, not preachy, not sentimental, exactly what people are writing in the reviews. We wanted to write a book together that is not about statistics and not about telling people what to do. You know, we're not experts, obviously. My son is an expert as an addict who now, in his 5 years of recovery, he manages 2 sober houses in Dallas, Texas.
Excellent.
And this is what he's doing all day long. So we really wanted to share from the very beginning how horrible and ugly everything was from his point of view, and then side by side the timeline of me, the mother who didn't know anything was going on, and then show how bad things can be and lead all the way to the end to show that recovery is real. Recovery can happen. We wanted to show our experiences. And we wanted to tell the story. It's a very, very simple book. It's almost as if, the way a lot of moms write to me and thanking me, tell me that it's as if we're sitting around a kitchen table and talking. It kind of gives permission to moms. I think when they read some of the things I say, I talk about, you know, some really bad things, that I hated my son. And a lot of mothers say to me, oh my God, I felt that way, but I would never say it out loud. Well, you know what? It's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay to say it. It's okay to talk about it. And I think that my son wanted to let parents, my son always said that no one in active addiction would pick this book up and read it. But if somebody was right on the brink, you know, somebody his age, maybe a mother or father would put it in their hands and they could actually see, oh my God, this kid was just worse than I am, but he did it. I can do it. And I really wanted, I think that the most important thing that I wanted to get out there to moms is learning to cross over. And yes, we love our children more than anything in life, but there's a very big difference between loving your children to death and loving your children to life. And that's the message I tried to get across, showing what I learned and how to learn how to do that.
That's a huge message. And it sounds like a lot of the way that you share makes people feel comfortable because they can almost relate through their own experience. And, you know, sometimes we don't think that these things can happen to real people like us. So by you sharing and helping, it probably makes it easier to come to grips and terms and to know what to do. So, you know, I love that you're talking about the recovery process. How is your son and your family dealing with the experience now? Do you feel that it's a distant memory that's kind of like in the rearview mirror, or is this something that you're always, always going to keep top of mind?
Well, it's never going to be a distant memory for me when I'm sitting with all these mothers every day,
right,
and talking with them. And experiencing, you know, each time a mom talks about what they're going through, I feel it all over again, and I feel for them. And recovery, this is about recovery for life. This is not, it took a very long time for him to get to where he was, and it takes a long time to be okay. He's never, ever going to not have this disease of addiction. I mean, a lot of these kids, my son obviously had a predisposition for addiction. And back to your very first question, until it wasn't until he was handed that little orange bottle that actually roused that monster from within. And that's when the addiction started, and it's something that he'll have to battle for the rest of his life every day. But he's given the tools now. He has the tools. He has a fellowship. I mean, sobriety, from what I've seen, this is the biggest fraternity in the world. I mean, everybody takes care of everybody. I'm not fearful for him if there ever was relapse, or I'm not afraid for him. I think He knows now. He's got the tools to get back up and keep moving.
That's really good to know, and that gives hope to so many. How about your other family members? Have things gone back to life and business as usual? Is everybody kind of just moving in sync and feeling good about recovery?
You know, it's really interesting because my daughter, I only have, you know, my son and my daughter, and it was very, very difficult for her when all of this started. And she wrote a lot in the book. She slammed him. And going to family treatment is the most important part of somebody going, you know, away to treatment. You've got to go in as a family. You have to all be a part of it together. Now, you can't put all of this on your child and expect them to go to a program and come home and none of the dynamics have changed and, oh, everything's fine. You know, how you doing? I'm glad you worked on your stuff.
Yeah.
Everybody has to get together. I mean, honestly, you really do. And, you know, sometimes now it's, and I can't complain. I'm not complaining that I have a son in recovery. I thank God every day that I have a son in recovery. But I will tell you that it's a whole different dynamic. And sometimes I get a little, you know, agitated because that overbearing, controlling mother comes out in me and I want to jump all over him about things. And my daughter now is the one that sets me straight. She's like, Mom, you know, haven't you learned anything? This is his recovery. You know,
that's great that she does that.
It's really interesting, all the dynamics. And I'm like, God, I really can't be that mother anymore. But I want to know what's going on.
Well, it sounds like your daughter learned a lot through the process as well.
Yeah, my husband is really calm and sensible about everything. And my daughter is a lot like him. So it's, you know, it's difficult for them trying to control the crazy family, the Greek mom.
Well, isn't it great to have the calm to balance out anything else in the family? So how would you say that, you know, your relationship, You and your son have been through so much. How has your relationship changed with him after going through all of this?
I have to say that there's, we were just filmed for a documentary, actually, my son and I, and it's
exciting.
And it's going to be very cool. But, you know, I went on to be interviewed talking about how excited I am that, you know, there's no more codependency. And at the end of the interview, the filmmaker said, "Well, Mrs. Devlin, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you, but you do need to do a little bit more work because I was watching you and your son, and it's still kind of there." So I like to think that I'm working more at being a better mom for both of my kids and not have all that stuff going on. I also have to say that I have so much respect for my son because, I mean, he actually just had to realize that he had a life worth living, and he chose to go to treatment. He was always afraid. He always knew he could be sober, but he was petrified that he couldn't be sober and be happy. And he reached out for the help, and he's the one that wants to go. That's a really important part of this where most parents struggle. You know, it's, you want your kid to go, you want them to go and get help. And until they're ready to get that help, it's really, really difficult. They have to want it. So I think our relationship has changed in a lot of different ways. And we work together now. He sends moms to me, you know, whose boys he has at his sober living houses, mothers that, you know, want to talk to a mom who's been through it. I call him. I called him three times today with three more moms whose boys need to go to sober living. We call each other. We talk about things. And, you know, he gives me information that I need. I'm not an addict. I need information from him on how he thinks.
Sure.
And then he's not a mom. He gets information from me, and I try to help him work with mothers. So it's really interesting. It's a different relationship. And it's I just thank God we have it, that I have him.
It sounds like a great relationship. So much respect. You're working together, sharing, you know, that really is a good relationship, and growing together is so important. And you mentioned about, you know, parents, and I'm sure being a better mom, as you said, to both your kids. If you were going to give advice to parents who, let's say, are frightened about addiction for their own children, or they're going through something like what you went through, what would you say to them?
I think that they really need to always, moms and dads, need to trust their intuition. I think they always really, really, obviously education is number one. Get online and educate yourself about addiction. Reach out. There are so many different places to reach out to get help. Never, ever worry about people judging you. That's the first thing that usually comes into play. None of this was your fault. And if anybody's out there judging you at your country club or your neighbors or your church, they're not worth it.
They're not.
Those people don't matter. They don't matter. It's all about helping your child. That's the only important thing. And the only thing that I was ashamed of as a parent was worrying more about those people than helping my son. And that's the one thing that I can really have to emphasize to parents. Just stay focused, breathe, take care of yourself, reach out for help, and get that oxygen mask on. Know that it's not a quick fix. It took a long time for your child to get here, and it's going to take a long time for them to come out of it. But you have to be together. A house divided will not stand. This is all about family, and you need to support this poor child who has this horrific disease of addiction.
Well, that's really good advice, Anita. Can you also offer any top, maybe warning signs so that someone else could recognize addiction before it's too late?
You know, I think a lot of the warning signs that I hear from other moms and things that I've seen, you know, that I saw within my son that, again, back then, I didn't relate it to pills, but, you know, strange changes in your child's behavior, mood swings, their regular friends disappearing and new friends coming around. And listen, very simply, you know, a lot of parents have meds in their bathroom cabinets, sleeping pills or, you know, medication they've been prescribed, pain pills, whatever. They start disappearing. Obviously, you didn't take them by mistake. If they start asking for money more than usual, not communicating and isolating themselves, sleep pattern changes, any of that, just trust your intuition. Something's up, something's different. Talk to your child and don't say to them, I hope you're not doing drugs. Don't do drugs. You need to tell, everyone needs to tell their kids, listen, I love you. Something's going on and you got something happening here and a problem. We love you and we're here for you. We will help you with anything you need, but you have to tell us what's going on.
Well, everything,
support.
The support is so important, and everything that you just said really can save a life. So my last question, how can my audience learn more about you and your new book, Sober?
I think probably the best place to go is to my website, AnitaDevlin.com, AnitaDevlin.com. And everything's there. You can read the first chapter of the book. You can go straight to Amazon. The book's available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. We have videos up there as well, just having conversations I'm having with my son about addiction. And, you know, Deidre, going back to one of your questions about family, how addiction affects the family, one of the videos that we have up there is actually a letter from our family dog that I wrote. Yes, I was crazy, but I was not a puzzle, so I didn't care, to my son in treatment. But it's really powerful, and it does affect everyone, even down to the family dog.
Well, I'm going to check that out, and I hope everyone checks that out as well. Anita, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your family's journey through addiction and now recovery. Your story is really inspiring, and you know, you certainly are educating people, but also giving a lot of hope to so many. So thank you.
Thank you, Deidre. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, and I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to Women Worldwide. And until the next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge, brought to you by Pure Performance Communications on the socialnetworkstation.com. You can reach Pure Performance at www.pureperformancecom.com. Women Worldwide is produced by SNI, and the opinions of the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of Social Network Intermedia, LLC, or the Social Network Station.